Namanda, I'll begin my talk this afternoon by reading one of Shinran's Wasan. This particular hymn was composed by Shinran Shonin to express his understanding and appreciation of the meaning of the Amida Sutra, one of the three Pure Land Sutras that form the basis for our Jodo Shinshu teachings. I invite you to join me in Gassho. The Buddhas of the Ten Quarters, countless as the sands of the Ganges, teach this Dharma that is most difficult to accept. For the sake of the evil world of the five defilements, they bear witness to the teaching and protect beings who take refuge in it. Good afternoon, everyone. Are you all managing to switch gears? As I was walking up here, I was trying to get my brain into more of Dharma mode. My family is really enjoying our time in San Diego. When I got back to the hotel room after our Wednesday business meeting, my wife and my sons were just coming into the hotel room with their swimming suits on, and the first thing my son said to me was, "Ducks pooping in the pool." You may have noticed that there are not a lot of swimmers in our pool here, but it creates a very nice atmosphere. Yesterday, when my sons came home with my wife from the hotel, it was actually, they came back after dinner, and the first thing my son did was pull out a little pack of Legos and said, "Let's build this." It was about 9:30 at night, and I was ready to sleep, but we put together some Legos. So they went to Legoland yesterday, and today they're at the San Diego Zoo. So they're really enjoying San Diego and all of its wonderful tourist attractions. I'm very much enjoying the interior of this hotel and all of the meetings that I've gotten to enjoy with my fellow ministers and all of you who've dedicated your weekends. And I'm sure there may be other activities with your families that you would like to be doing, or back home in your home communities at your home temples. But you've taken the time to come here down to San Diego and to gather and meet. And I believe that we're all gathered here with a deep sense of gratitude for the dedication and the legacy that we received during the presentation on the BCA archives at the Japanese American National Museum. I heard the expression, a stewardship of legacy. And I thought, well, that's a great expression for what we're doing as well. These national council meetings have been going on for decades. We've been gathering together as a Sangha to reflect on the direction of our organization, and that's why we're here today in San Diego. And as we gather here, I would like to take this opportunity to reflect on one of the great models for Buddhist leadership that we have in our Jodo Shinshu tradition. Here in the month of February, many of us have the custom of observing memorial observance for Lady Takeko Kujo. Lady Kujo lived in the first part of this century. She was born in the year 1887, and she was the daughter of Myōnyō Shōnin. Does anyone here know who Myōnyō Shōnin is? Yes? One of our BCA temples actually has a portrait of Myōnyō Shōnin in their Onaijin. Is anybody here from that temple? Yes? Okay. From the Orange County Buddhist Center. I guess Nishi has one too. Myōnyō Shōnin is significant for having been the first Gomonshu, the first leader of our Honganji tradition, to send ministers here to the United States, to what would be go on to become the Buddhist Churches of America. And his daughter, Lady Takeko Kujo, was born at this time when Japan was really beginning to step onto the world stage, at the end of a period of nearly 300 years of complete isolation. Japan had been totally cut off from the world, and Japan was beginning to step onto the world stage. And this was a time not unlike our own, where there was a lot of conflict in the world. And as Japan stepped onto the world stage, it wasn't too long before it got itself into a fairly major war, what's considered to be the first major war of the 20th century, the Russo-Japanese War. And this was at a time when Lady Kujo was still not even 20 years old. She wasn't even sort of fully into maturity. And yet she had the vision to participate in the founding of the Buddhist Women's Association. And I think that's what many of us know her for, her contribution to the founding of the BWA, or the Buddhist Women's Association. And it's interesting to reflect on the motivations for that. If you think about, Japan had been totally cut off from the rest of the world for over 300 years. And then all of a sudden, Japan steps onto the world stage and finds itself sending its sons, its fathers, its husbands off to fight a war with a foreign country, something Japan hadn't known in a very, very long time. This was a frightening and probably very stressful time, both for those who went to fight as well as those who sent their family members off. And many of those family members didn't return. And so Lady Kujo and some of the other leaders of the Honganji said, well, we need to do something to care for these families. So they organized the Buddhist Women's Association initially to kind of provide a structure for sending care packages and caring for the families of those who were facing this very terrifying and difficult situation of having people go off to war. It's not to say that they necessarily approved of war, but this was what was happening to the families, and so they stepped up to do what they could. And we see in her life that her concern for those who face difficulties in their times continues into maturity, into her maturity. As she comes into adulthood, she's spending a lot of time in Tokyo, which is the new kind of burgeoning, modernizing capital of the Japan, the new modern Japan. It had been the capital during the Edo period, but as it modernizes, like many cities that are modernizing and industrializing, you have lots and lots of people moving in from the countryside, right? People who had been living in small villages along the coast or in the mountains, coming to the city with dreams of fortune and wealth, and they find themselves working in very difficult circumstances and living in crowded, unsanitary places. And in the midst of all this sort of precarious, difficult, hard living, all these people coming in and struggling with the kind of negative side of industrialization and modernization, Japan in 1923 is struck by the great Tokyo earthquake, the great Kanto earthquake. Now, a few years back, in 2011, there was a great earthquake in Japan. For the great Kanto earthquake of 1923, there were about 140,000 people who lost their lives. So it was a major, major natural disaster. And Lady Kujo stepped in right there to show leadership, to care for those in the slums. She was a very well-known writer and poet. She was, of course, a leader of a very prominent family in Japan. So she was able to draw attention to the situation of these people, to care for them. And she founded a hospital called the Asoka Hospital. The Asoka Hospital, which continues to be an important hospital in the Tokyo area. And this was founded to provide modern medical care to all of these people who are in very difficult situations. And one of the ways in which she set about supporting that hospital was by writing a book. She wrote a book called Muyuge. She was a well-known, very well-known writer, and she wrote a book. This was translated in 1985 by the Southern District Dharma Schools Teachers League into English, so many of you probably have copies of this around your temple. And she wrote this book in 1927 and directed that all of the proceeds should go to this hospital. And so as we've been remembering Lady Kujo this month, I picked up a copy of this book from my library at the temple and began to read it and read through it. And I found a wonderful passage here that talks about It's rather surprising to me when I came across it. So I wanted to share that with all of you because I feel that it's very relevant to us and to what we are gathered here today to do. It's entitled, To Our Kin in the United States. Our kin in the United States are said to be tired from many years of persistent and painful persecution. I cannot express my feeling of sorrow when I consider that even though they have now a modicum of material comfort and have even given birth to second-generation Japanese in the United States, they must spend their old age in spiritual desolation. The only thing that provided the Jews with the strength to rise above their fate was their religion. The success of a race can be said to depend on their loyalty to religious tradition. Like the Jews of old, our kin in the United States are having their strength tested. The time has come for the Japanese in the United States to nurture their spiritual life through the inspiration of the Mahayana interpretation of Buddha Dharma. This fits in with the desires of the United States, which is striving to embrace all cultures of the world. That which allows us to overcome the difficulties of our fate is, after all, our own strength. And this is what is released by the teaching of the Buddha Dharma. So this was written in 1927. I think it's exceptional that she was concerned not only for those facing difficulty in Japan itself, but looking beyond the shores of Japan and recognizing her fellow countrymen facing challenges here in the United States. And we're all aware that the darkest time for the Japanese-American Jodo Shinshu Buddhists was yet to come in the coming decades with the rise in even greater sentiment, anti-Japanese sentiment, as the U.S. entered war with Japan, the internment, and all of those experiences that I don't need to relay to all of you now. I believe you're all very familiar with that. And in the midst of that, she says, turn to the teachings of Mahayana Buddhism. She doesn't go into much detail in what that means in this specific letter, but there's another poem in this same book that is very familiar to many of us. This is the song Seiya, or this was a common gatha in our temples in Japanese, sung years ago, and some temples, I believe, still sing it from time to time. But it's a beautiful expression of the Mahayana teachings. She talks about the dark night. Think about this world of darkness, disease, disasters, all the challenges that we still face today. And yet, she says, there's this riddle, these bright spots of light in the midst of this. Then she refers to this poem of Shinran that I read at the beginning of my message, where he says, the Buddhas of the 10 quarters, countless as the sands of the Ganges, that they're protecting the beings who take refuge in the Dharma. I think what it means to be protected is not that you don't get sick or you don't face difficulties, but she talks about the deep peace of mind. And I believe that we are here because those who came before made a great effort that the deep peace of mind we receive in the Nembutsu should be passed on, and that we are fulfilling that, living that here today, and that through our efforts here, we're also fulfilling that wish that the Nembutsu shall continue on to immeasurable time, the immeasurable life of the Buddha. So I'll conclude my message here by reading Seiya, this beautiful poem by Lady Takeko Kujo. The beauty of the starlit sky, who can understand this riddle? When countless eyes shine bright with tears of joy, my heart is at peace. There are Buddhas greater in number than the sands that line the Ganges River, who say, whether at noon or night, they will always protect me. My heart hears this and is at peace. Namanda, but 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 Namanda.